This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone. Nice to have you company for Talking Horses. It's been a huge weekend in sport, and if your team was playing in yesterday's AFL Grand Final, I hope the result went your way. I must confess, I'm a Collingwood supporter. Need I say any more? Anyway, on a brighter note, footy finals weekend is also a major one for racing, with Group 1 action at the Valley on Friday, and yesterday, Sydney hosted one of its biggest meetings of the spring, the Epsom at Randwick. We'll reflect on the main results. Also on the program, we'll catch up with well-known racing author Kristen Manning, who's just completed her third book, a biography on the legendary former jockey Darren Gauchy, which is about to hit the shelves. We also check in with Wyndham Park's Dr. Kim McKellar for the latest on his stallions, including his more recent addition, Crackerjack King. And coming up later, Steve Dundon, the executive producer of the much-anticipated equestrian and racing reality TV series Jump Off, which airs today for the first time, will join us on Talking Horses. Can't wait for this series, which is sure to be a big hit. But first, we had the Group 1 Moya Stakes at Moonee Valley on Friday night. The meeting, unfortunately, signalled the end of the grey flash Chautauqua's racing career. It was the last roll of the dice for stewards, and he simply refused to jump with the rest of the field.
Here we go. And he stood there. He didn't come out. He refuses to leave the barrier. Tommy Berry has given up on him. Chautauqua is still in the gates. He has refused to come out. What a sensation. He has not moved. He has decided that he will plant his feet. The attendants had to pick him up and take him out of the barrier. Chautauqua.
His owner, Rupert Lee, announced his retirement soon after that. The 8-year-old, 6-time Group 1 winner that amassed over $8 million in prize money is now likely to become a clerk of the course. We'll follow his progress. It was a sad night for his connections, but what can be done? He doesn't want to play a part anymore. The whole episode will go down as one of the most bizarre in modern racing history. But antics aside, let's remember Chautauqua for his amazing efforts on the track, including an incredible win in the Chairman's Sprint in Hong Kong. In the feature at the Valley on Friday night, Vidora notched up her second Group 1 win, and in doing so, might have earned her place in the world's richest turf race, the Everest, next month.
Nature Strip, full bore on the corner, he's in full cry. Vidora's two lengths away, starting to thunder. Vidora's got Nature Strip. Vidora moves up, brave smash late. Vidora in front, unlucky last year. She's the hero tonight, Vidora. Races home and wins the Moya from Brave Smash, photo third.
It was a barnstorming win by the mare Vidora on Friday night in the Group 1 Moya Stakes at Moonee Valley. Her trainer and part owner, Lloyd Kennewell, joining us on Talking Horses this morning. Congratulations, Lloyd. What a win.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, it was a brilliant night and one that I won't forget in a while, that's for sure.
I bet. And she was pretty unlucky in the race last year, so must have been nice to avenge that loss.
Yeah, it was. I sort of, the old cliche, we saw nature to keep looking backwards, so we tried not to think about that run too much. But it was obviously a barnstorming win on Friday night. And she's obviously come right on with it since last preparation, which is great to see.
She was first up on Friday night and had been working well on the track in the lead-up?
She had. She had a jump out at Caulfield and she won by a fair way and was very dominant in that. And then she went to Cranbourne Trials and had a nice soft trial. And yet again, she was also very good in that. So it was great to see both of those under her belt. And then she had a really good gallop at Moonee Valley just to top her off during the week. And she just hadn't put a foot wrong, really, in the last month, which is what you want to see going to a Group 1 race first up.
And coming round the turn, she was absolutely full of running and never in doubt of going on to win the race. She beat some very smart horses, the likes of Brave Smash and Nature Strip.
Yeah, that's right. She obviously has raced against some really good horses previously, and you never want to underestimate some good horses that come along. And I just got to hope that obviously things keep going right and we can move forward into some nicer races again.
She's notched up a very handy record for herself now. That advances her record to 9 wins and 8 placings from 27 starts. and prize money in excess of $2.5 million, Lloyd. Nice to be her trainer, but also, I'm sure, her part owner.
Yeah, obviously it's a great story. I was on the I'm Invincibles from day one. I had his first stakes runner in Silent Whisper, who was runner-up in the Maribyrnong Plate as a favourite. And that was the first crop and the first horse I bought. He was out of a very ordinary mare, and that enticed me to think that I'm Invincible was the right stallion to jump on board. And I never looked back after that. In the second season, I went back and obviously bought Bedora along with about half a dozen others. And I purchased her for $40,000 out of the Adelaide sale. And she was a real standout for me in that sale. I really liked the look of her, but it wasn't until probably 3 years old that we really started to see her coming to her own.
She's got an interesting breeding story. She's the second foal, Lloyd, of the five-time Melbourne winner Snowflight, herself a daughter of the Zabeel stallion Columbia, who's very well-bred himself, a brother to Octagonal and Moorwad.
Yeah, that's correct. He's obviously, Terry Hodgson bred the horse, and he was lucky enough to retain a small share in it when I purchased her from him out of that Adelaide sale. And he was adamant that the broodmare had a good one in her, and I think there's no doubt that he's actually right in saying that, because we've obviously got Fedora out of it. And obviously the bloodlines are very good, even though Columbia hasn't done a hell of a lot, more so the fact the bloodlines are there through the 8 Carat family.
What was it that appealed to you so much when you first looked at her at that Adelaide yearling sale?
Probably the funniest thing that you'll see is that a lot of these individuals that I've had great success with, I've found that they've been a little bit backwards as yearlings. And she was one of them. She never looked like being a real big, robust horse that she's turned into now. But I found that out after the first one that I bought, that a lot of them do keep continuing to develop and coming on as 3- and 4-year-olds. And obviously she's gone down that path in that mould. And I just felt that she had plenty of upside. $40,000 was a more than reasonable purchase. And the rest is history after that.
Yeah, she's done so well for you. A two-time Group 1 winner now, having won, of course, the Winterbottom Stakes last year in Perth for you. What's the plan from here on in? There is a slot available in the Everest. Is that a likely option?
Yeah, so there's obviously a couple of slots up at the moment with Nature's Trip pulling out now. So obviously a couple of slots available and a few other things still happening. So we're just going to make sure that we can do the best thing we can, put our case forward to see if we can get that final slot or final slots. And if that happens, it'll be terrific. It's not be all end all. We've obviously got the Manicato in mind after that. So we obviously clearly want to go to the Everest, and I feel that she's probably the best suited horse and probably the best sprinting mare in Australia at the moment. So we think it's great if we can get her in it.
What an exciting option for you, Lloyd. And this is all very timely, the success you're having with her and the rest of your team having relocated to Melbourne.
Yeah, it's been really good. Obviously, the plan was to try and get off to a good start here. Melbourne's obviously a very competitive market, but we feel that we've got the right clients and the right horses to bring here, and a lot of my clients are already here, existing people. So I just want to grow my brand and business to the next level. The timing finally came to do that, and we've been here obviously about 6 weeks. She's our fourth winner, and obviously to break a big race like a Group 1 of Moya Stakes, and the status really puts her up in lights, as well as myself. And obviously Joe, who's one of my best mates and rides her, he rode her an absolute treat. So it's worked out very well.
Yeah, couldn't ask for a better start, Lloyd. And what about the scenes of jubilation after she won last night? That was something to see.
Yeah, it was. It was unbelievable. It was. I think we've seen those scenes a little bit on the Gold Coast and a little bit in Perth as well. I actually said on another radio program last night, it was like feeding time at the zoo. It was very full on, and you wouldn't have wanted to have got caught up in the middle of it. I was up in the top of the grandstand watching it coming down, and I like to go and sit on my own and watch the races, and it was great to see everyone enjoy that like that after the race.
And have you raced with that band of owners much before in the past?
I know a fair few of them. A few of them I have raced horses with, and there actually is a fairly new crew in there as well. I put a couple of little syndicates together from Adelaide, and they're from all walks of life all over the state. And it was the first horse I put them into. They've now got about 4 or 5 horses, and they're very involved, very active. And there's also a lot of boys from Melbourne in the horse, including Nick Lovett from racing.com, and some really good people in the horse. So everyone's enjoying the ride that she's taken us on, and a lot of people aspire to win a Group 1, and they all finally achieved that result. With relief in the Winterbottom, and now they got to enjoy it again last night.
And how's she pulled up since the run?
Really good. Very happy with her. She seems in really good order, and I couldn't fault her this morning. She's obviously trotted out freely, looks good, and obviously we're hoping we can just try and strike a deal to get her into the Everest now.
Yeah. Well, you've got a busy week ahead getting all of that sorted. All the best of luck with the negotiations there, and if you do make it, we'll be cheering you on.
Thanks very much, Joe.
Okay, that's Lloyd Kennewell, the trainer and also part owner of the star mare Vidora, winning the Group 1 at the Valley on Friday night, now possibly Everest bound.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
A big program of racing at the Valley on Friday night, and the opener was won by Sunset Watch, a three-year-old gelding by Keed Mafeed, out of a schnitzel mare, Sarah Mina. Race two on the program at Group 2 over the mile, the Stock Stakes. I Am a Star Successful, a five-year-old mare by I Am Invincible, out of a Dixieland Band mare, Star Band. She's related to winners Band on the Run and Pulsar. The third race at the Valley was the JRA Cup over the Cox Plate distance at Group 3, won by the Taj Mahal. He's a five-year-old entire by Galileo out of a Storm Cat mare, You're So Thrilling. Race 4 on the program, a Benchmark 84 run over the short course of 955 metres. That was won by Essence of Terror, six-year-old mare by Reward for Effort out of a Royal Academy mare, Raywin, related to winners Phoenix Force, Ragnar Lodbrok. Race 5, the Stutz Stakes over the mile at Group 2, won by Leonardo da Hinci from the Darren Weir stable, a three-year-old colt by Hinchinbrook out of an octagonal mare, Portrait. Sources related to a number of winners, including Amicone Original, Honestly, and Rayburn, and was a $100,000 yearling sales purchase out of Perth in 2017. The Group 3 Scarborough Stakes over 1,200 metres, won by Merrill. She's a three-year-old filly by Epaulette, out of a Maid of Gold mare, Academy Idol, related to winners Chosen Idol, Circle of Trust, and Miss Idyllic. They paid $150,000 for her at the 2017 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. Race 7, the Group 1 feature, the Moyer Stakes, run over 1,000 metres, won by the six-year-old mare, Vidora. She's by I Am Invincible out of the Columbia mare Snow Flight, and is related to a winner, Relentless Me. And as you heard earlier on the show, she was purchased for just $40,000 from the 2014 Magic Millions Adelaide yearling sale, an absolute bargain buy. Race 8 on the program, a Benchmark 90 over 1,200 metres, won by Matt Laurie's Moon Lover, a five-year-old daughter of I Love This City, out of a Danehill mare, Moon Dreamer. This horse is related to LVR, Philly Buster and Sing Surratt, all winners. A massive day of racing in Sydney yesterday, 8 of the 9 races all at black type. The opener was the Jim Crack Stakes at Group 3 over 1,000 metres, won by Snowden Racing's Catch Me, a two-year-old filly by I Am Invincible, out of an O'Reilly mare, Captivating Claire. She was purchased at the Easter yearling sales last year for $625,000. Race 2, the Arrowfield Breeders, played over 1,000 metres at Group 3, won by Aquas Farms Dubious, a two-year-old colt by Not a Single Doubt, out of an elusive city mare, Suspicious. They paid $350,000 for her at last year's Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. The third race on the program at Randwick yesterday, the Dulcify over the mile at listed level. And Mickey Blue Eyes was successful, a three-year-old colt by Medalia D'Oro out of a Zabeel mare, Carolina Bella. Related to a winner, Super Swoop, Mickey Blue Eyes was purchased for $350,000 at the 2017 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. The fourth event on the program at Group 2 was the Yulong Australia Hill Stakes over 2,000 metres. It was won by Ace High, a four-year-old entire by High Chaparral out of a Redoute's Choice mare come Sunday. This horse is related to a winner, Denny's Lincoln, and they paid $130,000 for him at the 2016 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. The Group 2 Premier Stakes over 1,200 metres, won by Anthony Friedman's gelding Santa Ana Lane. He's now a six-year-old. He's by Lope de Vega out of a Fastnet Rockmare Fast Fleet. They paid $80,000 for Santa Ana Lane at the 2014 edition of the Inglis Premier Yearling Sales. Race 6, the Group 1 Flight Stakes over the mile, won by Tony McAvoy's filly Uhud. She's by I Am Invincible out of a Sunday Silence mare Bella Sunday, and is related to a lot of winners. Another Sunday, Bint Snitzel, Breakfast in Bed, Chicanti, Don't Doubt Me, Mac Missile and Sunday Chill. The Group 1 feature yesterday in Sydney was the Epsom Handicap over the mile and a deserved win to Hartnell. He's now an 8-year-old, a gelding by authorised out of an Anabar mare, Debonair. Second home in the Epsom was D'Argento, an entire by So You Think, and the third place getter was the Fastnet Rockmare, Unforgotten. And race 8, the Group 1 Metropolitan over 2,400 metres, won by Chris Waller's 7-year-old gelding, Patrick Erin. He's a son of Gallant Guru, out of a personal escort mare, Mega Babe, related to winners Beijing Boy, Erin's Babe, Gallant Boy, and Tons of Vitality. And that's a look back at what was a superb day of racing in Sydney yesterday. And now we count down there to the Everest, which is coming up next month. Last year, we announced on the show the retirement of Crackerjack King to stud at Wyndham Park in Victoria. We thought we'd check in with Dr. Kim McKellar from Wyndham Park to see how the horse has been going over the past year or so. How are you, Kim?
Very well, thanks, Joe. Nice to hear your voice.
How's he settled into stud duties?
He's an old hand, he's an old stager. He's just a very, very relaxed individual and seems to enjoy his work. No nasty traits at all, thank goodness.
Got a great pedigree, of course, and he was a very serious galloper himself. In Europe, of course, between 1800 and 2200 metres were amongst his best performances, and he was the winner of 7 races, including Group 1 level in Europe. What's been the take-up rate for this horse like in Australia?
I think it's been a bit disappointing, actually. He probably got 45 last year, and I'm not quite sure what his numbers are going to be this year. But I'm hoping that now that Jackalbury is obviously firing shots in New Zealand and coming over here for the big races, who's his half-brother and probably by a lesser sire, maybe that might kick him along a bit. But I think he's been undervalued from the point of view of the breeders in Victoria. Mm. I think the critical thing with him is that his first start was over 1,800 metres. And I just wonder, in actual fact, whether he might have been okay at 14 and 16 because he's a much more, he's a very fast horse. And he looks more like a 1,600-metre horse to me than a 2,000-metre horse.
Rebel Raider has been a good performer for you. What's the latest with him?
Oh, well, we've got Dollar Bill coming over to stay the night before he tackles a race at Mooney Valley. I think just the fact that we've got 5 serious trainers sending mares to him. I mean, trainers are very slow to send mares to stallions. But we've got 5 trainers and 2 of the best in the land sending their own mares to the stadium, and I think that's the best indicator you can have. So we've got Wasabi Bob, we've got Pretty Punk, we've got Dollar Bill currently out there, but there's a lot more to come through.
Yeah, okay. It's taken him a little while to get rolling, but as you say, with those excellent quality racehorses now gracing the tracks, it just makes your job so much easier to market these stallions.
It's much easier to talk to people. But, I think the exciting thing about him is that the people that have got him just love him and they just keep saying, yeah, well, I've got a Rebel Raider. And everyone identifies the fact that what the type they are and that they are also not just mile-and-a-half horses. They're winning from 1,200, 1,100 metres right through to the longer distance. So he's obviously got enough speed in there to carry most pedigrees.
Mm, okay, and what's been the response to him for this season?
We're looking at about 80 at the moment, and I think that we had 110 last year, and it's still fairly early days because there's something like 60 mares here on the farm that we haven't had allocated stallions yet. So for my information, it's too early to be predicting numbers, but it's going to be over 80 anyway.
Mm. Another horse on your roster, an interesting type, is Sports Edition, Kim.
That's interesting. One of my clients is in Port Douglas, has been Srikandi's mother to him this year. And he rang me up the other day and said, do you realise that the Autumn Sun's out of the same damn line as Sports Edition? And I thought, oh, you're joking. But in actual fact, it goes right back to a really good
mare in, out of the Talmud, which is I find quite fascinating. Born a lady, yeah. They both go back to born a lady, which is in the fourth dam. It's very close up. So that, I mean, his brilliance is there, and and the fact that he's a fool to Amanpour is also very handy, because they basically, when Amanpour is a very good horse, and this horse only had four stars, sports edition. So we're looking at the potentially have a very good sprinter stallion.
He's a lovely type of horse for listeners that might want to research him on your website in the gallery. You've got a lovely headshot of him posted. He is absolutely stunning, a chestnut horse. And he's the stakes-winning son, of course, of champion sire Northern Meteor, and one of only three Northern Meteor colts to win at stakes level as a two-year-old, and the others were Zoo Star and Fighting Sun.
Yeah, but it's a full to Amanpour too, so that really does improve the whole thing, I think. Amanpour is a very good racehorse.
And what's he like temperament-wise around the farm?
Very casual. There's no sting in him at all. No, he's a lovely horse. I mean, we're really lucky at the moment because they're all good to handle.
Yeah, okay. And what else has been making news at Wyndham Park over the past year or so since we last spoke to you?
No, not much. I had a nice holiday this year. Does that help?
Things must be going all right then if you can take a nice holiday.
Well, I think it's about time in my life that I should, because I'm starting to slow down on the veterinary side. So at the age of 74, I think it's probably time to hang up that sort of gear and just go back and enjoy the stud farm rather than be out there trying to make racehorses go faster.
Yeah. So have you retired from veterinary work altogether, or are you still doing a bit here and there?
Still doing some, but being a bit selective. Not doing the mainstream fire engine stuff at night anymore, no.
Yeah, fair enough. Where did you go for your holiday, do you mind me asking?
We went to Europe for a couple of weeks and did a bit of that river cruising, which I thought was a bit dull. But then we went up to Norway, and I found Norway absolutely fascinating. I mean, the place is so clean, the people are so friendly, the whole environment's quite amazing. Absolutely no graffiti, no rubbish on the roads. It was just a pleasure. Beautiful countryside.
Did you visit any horse properties or race meetings on your travels?
No, I missed them all. I don't know why, but I just missed the whole lot.
Oh, well, you probably have enough of it to deal with at home.
I've done the island business. I've been to Coolmore and all those places, and the Curra. No, I thought we'd just get away and do something completely different. But no, very enjoyable. Should be. I recommend it to anyone.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Kim McKellar, on Talking Horses this week.
Thank you very much, Joe.
And nice to hear that things are going well for them at Wyndham Park, with Rebel Raider in particular. And let's hope that things can fire up for Crackerjack King in the next season or two.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
So they're across the track as they reach the 300 metres, where it's Master Brax, East India Man, moving up with Amphitrite now, who's dropping on them at the 200. East India Man, Amphitrite, Sakaro late. East India Man and Amphitrite. Amphitrite at the 50 takes the lead. Sakaro thrusting. Amphitrite a half in front of Neck, and Amphitrite won a Neck. Sakaro, East India Man, fourth sub-raised.
Amphitrite produced a fast-finishing win at Flemington on Wednesday, beating the Colts and Geldings. And she's now potentially bound for the Group 1 MRC Thousand Guineas and Group 1 VRC Oaks. The Darren Weir trained filly scored an impressive win at Sale on September 9 at her first run back from a spell, following an initial campaign that produced 2 seconds and a fourth placing. She's a much stronger filly this time round. She was a $50,000 Magic Millions Adelaide yearling sale purchase from the Golden Farms draft for Flying Start Syndicate and Darren Weir Racing. Amphitrite is the third winner from three to race from Ocean Dream, a Redoute's Choice half-sister to Group 1 winner Marble Halls. The family has also produced Group 1 MRC Blue Diamond Stakes winner Sleek Chassis. Amphitrite was bred by Golden Farms, and her dam Ocean Dream has been to their stallion Akeed Mafeed in subsequent seasons. Lovely to have Melbourne Racing Identity Kristen Manning joining us on Talking Horses this morning. Kristen is a well-known author and has just finished another book, this one, The Gouch, which tells the story of one of Australia's most famous and most liked and most accomplished jockeys, Darren Gouchy. How are you this morning, Kristen?
Excellent. And you, Joe?
I'm very well. I was very excited, Kristen, to receive my copy of The Gout. She's one of my all-time favourite jockeys. How did you enjoy putting the book together?
It was a fabulous experience. I think a lot of people say that he's their favourite, and he's maintained that sort of popularity over a long period of time.
Mm. Well, from the first time that he sat on a horse at the age of 12, it was considered that he had what it took to be a high-class rider, and he was deemed a very natural athlete that had an innate affinity with horses.
Yes, everyone who saw him rode, and I think Jeff Bamford, the popular Victorian country jockey, was the first to notice it, that he was just part of the horse as soon as he sat on one. Although Darren admits that he was a little bit scared the first time he rode a pony, but as soon as he learnt what to do, he said it was just felt so natural.
Mm. And as an apprentice, his career was outstanding. He smashed a lot of records.
I can't see it happening again, what he achieved. It happened so quickly. You know, he had that massive running streak when, in his second year, he was riding Group 1 winners in the Spring Carnival at his second spring ever. It happened so quickly, and he lost his claim in a Group 1. And, you know, we know a lot of apprentices struggle once they lose their claim, but there was no loss of momentum whatsoever for Darren.
Mm. Had great ability in the saddle, and very early on in his career, those rock star looks made headlines as well.
He had amazing popularity. You know, I just came over so many newspapers where he was actually on the front page, which, you know, racing struggles to get on the front page these days. And he had a fan club of over 3,000 members, which is hard to imagine.
Yeah, and he rode for, of course, many of the best trainers in the land and forged relationships with some of our great horses, including Superimpose and Lonro.
Yeah, not too bad ones there, are they? He also rode Octagonal. He didn't win on him, but he still considers him one of his favourites. And, of course, early on, horses like Pleach and Chagamar were terrific for him as well. And his first two Group 1 winners, River Ruff and Taj Eclipse.
What, after doing so much research on the Gout, Kristen, would you say was his greatest achievement as a jockey?
I think being so widely liked still. You know, if you, the longer you're in a game, not enemies, but, you know, you've got people ready to criticise you. And it's very hard to find anyone critical of Darren. He's just so popular and so well-liked. He maintained his humility right through his career, no matter how well he did. I'd say to him, gee, that was a great ride on, say, Lonro and the Corporal Guineas. And he put all the kudos under the horse and the trainer and take very few of it, lack of it for himself.
And off the track, he was well-known, of course, for the much-reported marriage to the young talentine darling, Karen Dunkerton.
Yeah, that's something else that made front-page headlines at the time. Yeah, they were the darlings of the media.
And they've had children together and a happy family life.
Yes, four children, and who all got successful careers themselves. And Bree had a bit to do with organising Darren's final day at Caulfield with Josh Rodder, which was a great success, and had a big turnout, and he really loved that day.
He rode for a long time, didn't he? Four decades his career spanned.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And, you know, so much of that at the highest level. And towards the end of the career, of course, the opportunities dried up a bit. But once he realised that that was happening, he just decided to enjoy it. So he'd go to lots of country meetings, you know, up to Wangaratta and Echuca and wherever. He just loved being with the horses, and that never died in him.
Mm. Kristen, this is the first biography that you've written, and it's the third book you've produced on Australian horse racing. How have you enjoyed this journey?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Obviously, the first two were about horses, Fields of Omar, Prince of Penzance, which were fantastic to research but didn't take all that long, whereas delving into a person's life is a lot more not quite so simplistic, but I was lucky that one of Darren's father's friends kept a record of every single one of his rides until about 2005, and Darren's family also kept scrapbooks, so I had a lot to work with.
The good old scrapbook, you would have seen some amazing stuff as you thumbed your way through those.
I did. What just amazes me is how big racing was in the media in the 1980s. You know, it has certainly diminished in that time, but racing was so often on the front page, which was wonderful to read articles. And even when Darren bought his first car, it was on the front page.
He was an absolute superstar, wasn't he? And he still is so well-liked and popular today and plays an important role in the sport still.
Yes, he's working with Racing Victoria in the Young Jockey Program, one of the teachers there, and I was lucky enough to go and watch him at work in one of the classes. And he's just got an amazing demeanour with the kids. I guess he has it with horses too. And they really respond to him, and I think they're so grateful that they've got a riding of his calibre teaching them.
He must be enjoying that role.
He's loving it, yeah. He's the last few race meetings I've been to Tura and Flemington, he's been there with the kids. So to be still such an intrinsic part of the sport he loves is fantastic for him.
And, well, for you, this is the end of another an intense period putting a book together. Will you have a bit of a breather before moving on to the next likely project?
Yes, I think so, but I've always got my eyes open for the next one. So we need, I really enjoyed the biography experience, so I'd love to do another one of those. But I also love working on the horses, but there's so many topics in racing, as we know, and you never know when the next one's going to come along.
Well, surely there's got to be a book about Winx in you, Kristen.
Oh, I'd love to, but there's already two.
I know, but I'm sure you can find a point of difference somewhere.
True, but there'll be another champion coming along, you just never know, do you?
What are some of the young up-and-coming horses that you've got an eye on at the moment, especially with the spring now in full swing?
I guess it's hard because your three-year-olds often, the colts go to stud so quickly and they don't get that time to build up the momentum that you need for a book. But I was thinking that Chautauqua would be an interesting book because he's had so many pinnacles and downs to his career.
Yeah, God, hasn't he been a mystery horse? So he's often the subject of this very program. Rupert Lee, very kind with his time, discussing the highs and lows of Chautauqua's life. What are your thoughts on the likelihood of him making a successful comeback?
I don't know, but I hope he does. I mean, everyone's hoping. I've been a big fan of Encosta de Lago breed for a long time, and they can get a bit cheeky as they get older. You know, we had one called Duro Valley, and as he got older, he got a bit funny in the barriers. And I watched the breed, and I think they're quite intelligent, and they, I don't think he's scared or anything. I just think he's got the upper hand on all the humans around him.
Have you got any horses racing of your own at the moment?
Yes, we've got Kalato, who we were lucky enough to win a Group 3 last spring. She's in the Blazer Stakes on Saturday week, so we're heading towards some nice spring races with her, so fingers crossed.
Oh, well, good luck, and well done again on your third book, your first one on a human being, The Gouch, of all people in racing to write about. It must have been a really enjoyable progress for you. And good luck for the next likely book, which, well, by the sounds of it, may be on the Grey Flash Chautauqua.
You never know. I haven't approached anyone yet, but I'd love to do it.
All right. Thanks for joining us on the program. And when, by the way, is the book on the shelves?
Yeah, it'll be on the shelves the next week or two, but you can also go on to Melbourne Books' website, which you can Google and find it there as well.
All right. Well, I've got to say it's a highly impressive piece of work by you, Kristen, and for those that are fans of Gouch, of which there are many, I would strongly suggest that you pick up the copy of The Gouch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you,
Joe. That's Kristen Manning, the author of The Gouch. That's her latest work on Australian racing. Well worth reading. We're all looking forward to the launch of the much-anticipated equestrian reality TV series called Jump Off this afternoon on Channel 7. The founder of this fantastic concept and producer of the show from Showmakers Equestrian, Steve Dundon, is our special guest on Talking Horses this morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm well, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
The day has finally come. So much hard work has gone on behind the scenes, more than a year of filming and beyond that, so much time spent in the planning. And finally today, you go to air.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting for everybody also too. I think, it's a bit of a launch for Equestrian on mainstream media in Australia. It's very big overseas, but we don't have any of it in Australian television. So, we're very, very excited. So all our production team and all the other participants in the series, everyone's looking forward to it. So, very excited.
As background for our listeners, Jump Off is an exciting new reality TV format where five teams will compete for their share of $100,000 in prize money. Hosted by Hamish McLaughlin from Channel 7 and produced by Showmakers Equestrian, the series features off-the-track racehorses and promotes the lifetime care of thoroughbreds. So for you, Steve, this really marries the sport of horse racing and show jumping together, two sports that you're very passionate about. Yourself, you're an equestrian and a keen jumping rider. But tell us the background as to how you came to this whole idea in the first place.
Well, I was obviously, as you said, I ride. I have a lot of friends in the horse racing space who are all owners, trainers, and a lot of punters, actually. So I was up in Sydney, actually, and I was around when the greyhound industry there was some where they were shut down there up in Sydney, and that whole saga up there, and I thought to myself, if we don't do something positive, there's a lot of negativity around horses, you know, and having been in the space, I know that that's not, you know, they're not mistreated, that, you know, an animal abuse story will probably make front page, whereas, there was a lot of positives that they all go unnoticed and it doesn't get the attention. So I thought, well, if we don't get on our front foot and do something positive, it's our fault. So we need to do that. So I harnessed a few racehorses. I had the idea of marrying the racing industry with show jumping discipline. Out of all equestrian sports, it's a very easy one to understand for the general public, and thought, what can I come up with and create something to educate the general public that these horses can have a second career, and they can have a lovely life after racing. And that's what I came up with, which was five teams, and teamed them up with the show jumping riders. So five of Australia's leading trainers with five Olympic and Australian champion show jumpers, and put them together and trained them off the track horses to compete for a second career, which is show jumping.
The calibre of some of the racehorse trainers you've got involved include David Hayes, you've got Darren Weir, Mick Price and Patrick Payne, as well as Godolphin Australia's head trainer James Cummings. That's some lineup. And then on the jumping riders side of things, you've got the iconic Vicky Roycroft involved and Jamie Kermond, who recently represented Australia at the World Equestrian Games with success.
Yeah, it's a great lineup. Dave Cameron, Australian champion, Russell Johnston, 1996 Atlanta Olympian. It's a really, Peter McMahon, Beijing Olympian. So it's a great lineup, and they're all as passionate as I am about the whole idea, which is even better.
And some of the horses that will play their part in the series include Extra Zero, who himself was a highly successful racehorse and quite popular with the Australian public.
Yeah, he's a ripper. So 109 starts. We actually got him a couple of days after he retired. A horse that won his 100th start, but 101, I think it was, which was interesting. And it was a fantastic to have a horse like that in the show. Lankan Rupee is also there. $4 million of prize money. So there's some big names, but, I think the biggest story is the fact that there's horses in there that, we've got one horse that won $950. So to me, that's as good a story as any story, that this horse has as much chance as a superstar of having a second career. And some of them actually, the horses that don't win as much money have actually gone on to become better jumpers within the series. So, it'd be interesting for people to watch. And I think for racegoers and equestrian people, there's something in there for everybody.
Might take that as a little hint that maybe that $950 prize money earner features pretty prominently in the show and may have even won it. Who knows? Because that's all top secret, of course. The series does culminate in what is a spectacular indoor show jumping competition. And it was filmed, Steve, in front of a live audience at Boneo Park Equestrian Centre in Victoria.
Yeah, it was. It was a very cold night, but everyone, typical equestrian crowd, didn't worry them, and it was fun. Yeah, it was received very, very well. We were inundated with people wanting to come to it, and just gave us really. It was very. We were very well supported, but it was very exciting to see the amount of support we've got for the idea and the amount of people that wanted to be there, and also too, these horses. They're not jumping Olympic heights of 1.60 meters, jumps. They are not at that level, but everyone was just as enthused to see how well these horses perform. And it's a pressure environment, but they all did well. The riders were great, the trainers were great, and so were the crowd. Yeah, it was a big night. So you have to stay tuned for that till the end.
Yes, and there's a fantastic Facebook page that fans can follow. And on that, Steve, over the past year or so, you've been sharing various highlights from filming out in the field. And what seemed apparent to me was that there seems to be a deep mutual respect between the horsemen and women involved here from both racing and jumping. And there are obviously some rather funny moments that occurred as well.
Yeah, there was some great stuff happened throughout the whole journey, as you'd expect. But there's some bits that can't go on telly. But they have good memories for us. Now, look, it was a lot of fun, and you know, but you're right, there is that respect between, there's a massive respect between the show jumping riders. It's a competitive industry. You know, these guys here, you know, when the Olympics come around every 4 years, everybody tunes in, but they seem to go, you know, everyone goes missing a little bit in between. So we're trying to fix that. Showmaker's equestrian. But, you know, the trainers, having David Hayes, you know, he was blown away by what goes into some of the show jumping training. And those, you know, it's a great insight. These guys love being part of it. Paddy Payne was fantastic. You know, really, really got involved. And it was lovely to see them all. You know, Darren Weir and his team, they were fantastic in getting behind it, the whole process. We're looking forward to getting ready for our second series, which is great news for us.
That's fantastic news for the sport as a whole, as we try to raise the profile of equestrian in Australia. Equestrian internationally, particularly in Europe and America, is so much more high profile and advanced than it is here down under.
It is. It's just, I mean, over there it's a different world. And you know, there's a very supportive audience that respect and they understand the sport. And I think, look, you know, we as a country here, everyone was brought up, you know, horses were a part of life, they're a mode of transport, and since then, I think, you know, the wider population in Australia, anything to do with a horse you see of movies and stuff, it always, you know, there's always people love it, and I think the more we do in this space, the better. But the more we can showcase these sports, you know, there are professionals, it's a big industry, as you would know, it's a big industry across racing, and it's also too, it's a lifestyle industry across everything from show jumping to eventing to pony clubs to adult riders. You know, it's a big audience, and we're really, really keen to be able to create and produce quality. We call it, you know, entertainment for these audiences and to help the industry.
Can't wait for it to all air. So episode one goes onto Channel 7 this afternoon in Sydney and Brisbane at 3 o'clock, and it will be broadcast out of Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, Tasmania at 3:30. Racing.com has really got behind the concept as well, Steve, and they'll be airing the show also.
They will. They'll run Mondays, Saturday nights and Sunday mornings. They'll repeat the show for us beyond three times a week. It's also on catch up on 7, so you can series record it if you've on Foxtel. So yeah, plenty of ways to be able to keep your eye on the show, and you know, there are a lot of horse riders that are out riding on a Sunday, but don't despair, you'll be able to find it. It is as I said, you know, racing.com and 7, great supporters. Racing Victoria have been fantastic, and the off the track program as well. So yeah, we've been, and our other sponsors within the series have been wonderful. So yeah, great, exciting times for us and the sport.
They are. Steve, you've worked at a high level of television production for over 25 years. How does this experience compare to some of the other projects that you've worked on?
Oh, look, I think it's, you know, this is something I'm pretty passionate about. I think to do something like this, you know, you need that passion, and you need to also understand, from an education point of view, you understand what it is that needs to be on television. I think because you have an audience that's also being educated. If you're watching it, there's a lot of little nuances in equestrian that a lot of people, if you're not into the sport, you probably don't understand. But the good part about this series is it's entertaining. It's also educational, which we think is pretty important. It is, you know, it's not we don't eliminate anybody. We don't, you know, this program is not about, I've made plenty of those programs where, you know, but in this series we don't lose contestants, where everybody stays until the end, and that's one positive thing. It's a positive experience for everybody in there. You know, we still have entertainment, there's ups and downs, but the reality is we want to keep that form, so that we don't become, you know, it's not a nasty program. It's very, very positive. But look, we're having, you know, said that, everyone likes the entertainment. So there's plenty of entertainment in there. And there's plenty of funny bits as well.
Steve, really looking forward to the series launching this afternoon on Channel 7 in Melbourne. It will air at 3:30. I'm sure there will be plenty of fans that have been following the progress of this series already that will be sitting in their lounge room somewhere watching. And good luck for Series 2. That's really pleasing news that you're going to embark on that.
Thanks very much, Joe, and thanks for your support.
That's Steve Dundon, the executive producer of Jump Off, the equestrian reality TV series that launches today on the Seven Network. And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks to our special guests this week, Dr. Kim McKellar, Kristen Manning, Steve Dundon and Lloyd Kennewell. And good luck if you're focusing today on the Group 1 meeting at Caulfield. Can't wait for the Underwood Stakes this afternoon. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.